Hello, welcome to Words with a Wise Guy. This is the first ever podcast here at Wichita State TV. And today we're with Cole Davis, who's the head coach at Friends University. This is the first one of these podcasts. I'm not sure why they have entrusted me to do this for the next hour or so, but we'll hopefully find some things that are entertaining for you to listen to and watch. Here we're on YouTube, and if you're also following along on iTunes or wherever you might download it from, spread the word, subscribe, WSU TV, and hopefully you'll be able to find it every time we do a podcast in the future. First of all, just kind of, I'm a podcast guy. I don't know about you, Cole. You ever listen to podcasts?
I've gotten more into it lately from, I guess, the suggestion of my buddy John Wise here, but it's been something that's been growing, I think, tremendously in the last couple of years. So I've been excited to kind of get more involved with it in the last year or so.
You know, there's the thing about podcasting, which is cool, is that pretty much anything you're interested in, there's a podcast for.
Right.
And so there should be at least 5-10 people listen to this one, I got to think.
At least.
Yeah.
Probably most of our athletes.
Yes. I think, I got 4 relatives. And then you're probably girlfriend.
I decided not to tell anybody about it, just in case it goes really badly. So we'll see.
If this goes badly, we're blaming Kurt Ryerson.
Correct.
Okay. So you are the head coach at Friends University, track and field. For those of you that don't know, there's a good picture. Was that your, 12th birthday party?
That was my first day on the job, and I had no Friends gear whatsoever. So they gave me a polo that was, I think it was a double extra large, and I weighed about 180 pounds. And I look really excited about my first head coaching job as well, but I'm not happy that that's on the internet, and I'm going to see if I can do something about taking that down. But
So you go from there, which they look like they gave the program to a high school kid.
Correct.
To last year, you guys finished 4th in the national championships.
Correct.
Which is the best in the history of Friends University in any sport. I think that's better than Wichita State ever. It's the best track and field national finish in the city. That's pretty amazing to think about.
Yeah, I mean, Friends versus WSU, that's what we got. But yeah.
And I think I heard, so they were so impressed with your finish,
mm-hmm.
that what did you get bumped up to, 2.8 million?
Not quite. They decided to just leave me right where I was at.
I thought it was Charles Koch, Greg Marshall, Cole Davis.
And then
that
Cole
was
Davis.
The Wichita.
Right. Okay. I mean, I believe that's the pecking order where we should kind of be at, but
at least you're tops on the west side.
Exactly. It's a lot of inner motivation on how good you want to be kind of at that level. And as we all know, I mean, track and field coaching isn't about the money. It's about chasing the dream and developing kids and trying to build up a program. So,
So you have an interesting route to where you are, and you have coached at just about every level except Division I.
Correct.
So you've coached at, obviously, the NAIA level. You've coached at junior college. You have, you've been a Division II athlete.
Mm-hmm.
You obviously ran, did you coach high school?
Yeah, and junior high
High.
It was kind of my first coaching gig. I was actually in junior college running in JUCO, and the track that we used, we had to share a track with the high school, and the middle school also shared the same track. It was over in Pratt, Kansas. So I knew the high school coaches there from graduating from high school, and they needed some help with their jumps, and so I would go to my junior college practice, and then right afterwards I would just stay there and help coach the high school and the junior high kids and kind of travel with them on the weekends when we didn't have meets, or go to Thursday meets or JV meets and kind of help them out. So got my first crack at coaching while I was still an athlete, which was definitely a benefit of kind of learning how to do things at the same time as you're teaching them. So
I coached high school track for 3 years. I'm opposite ends of the spectrum. Division I coach and athlete, high school coach for 3 years. So you're all everything in between. So what is the, I don't know, which one did you like the most, I guess? And then what's the differences from coaching a junior high kid to an NAIA kid that was a national champion or something?
Right. And I think that's the great thing about coaching is there's these great highs at every single level that you can kind of get. And it's, you're working with a junior high kid and you're basically figuring out, what can this kid do? They don't even really know their own body yet. So a kid PRs by 3 feet in the long jump each meet because they're just figuring stuff out. So you kind of see those awesome aha
moments. Makes you an awesome coach when they PR that
exactly.
Much.
You feel really good about yourself. Yeah. But so there were some great moments there. I mean, at high school, getting a kid to the state championship and placing there, it's one of those almost same feelings of, hey, I'm now at a conference meet, and a kid's scoring at the conference meet that you might have developed from a freshman up to that mm-hmm. point. So I've really enjoyed the college atmosphere where I've been at Friends, just in the aspect of I've got to create my own program and find the kids that I think fit well with not just how I coach, but the university as a whole. And that's something where I take a lot of pride in building my team the way that I would like it to be built. So having more of that freedom at this level is what I've probably enjoyed the most.
So how do you recruit at the NAIA level? Because you're obviously have figured out how to have a good team. You guys have won the KCAC and you were fourth at the national meet. You've had, you know, some unbelievable good athletes at that level. How do you get better? Like, is the goal to win a national title, or what do you do next?
Yeah.
And that's top what you did last year.
That's kind of the goal every year has been, hey, what can we do to become a little bit better than we were the year before? And I think at the NAI level, you have to be pretty creative in the ways that you recruit. I try to look at what some of the Division I programs are doing and how they're attracting their best recruits in the country. And I just kind of have to dumb that down a little bit to, okay, these are some of the best kids in Kansas. How do I convince them from going to a WSU or going to a Emporia State or a Pittsburgh State or something like that? So we have some perks at our level where I think it's a little bit easier for them to have some immediate success. And we might talk about that a little bit later, but the mindset of some of the high school kids now is, hey, I want to go be good. I want to contribute. I want to go to nationals. I want to do some of those things. So we try to take advantage of that a little bit and talk to them about, hey, you can go Division I. You might have to walk on. You might have to build up to be in a conference team for 3 years. You might never go to nationals. You can come here as a freshman, be a part of a team that's chasing a conference title, have a bunch of teammates that are from the state of Kansas. We recruit a lot of local kids and have that immediate success of, hey, I can go win a conference title as a freshman, or, hey, I can go qualify for nationals as a freshman. So we use a lot of those things to try to kind of sway them our way at times.
Yeah, we have that opposite problem right now because changing our conference. We're trying to obviously recruit higher-level kid and it's going to be harder for a freshman to immediately make an impact because it's just going to be a little bit tougher in a new conference. And, you know, we're recruiting less of the same kids nowadays.
I appreciate that. How have you had to change your recruiting from the Missouri Valley to move into the American? I mean, is it a shift in the caliber of kids, or are you still chasing a lot of those, like you said, the same type of kids?
The best kids are still the same. So Hunter Veith, who was really good last year, he was good in the Missouri Valley. He was good in the American. He was like, you know, so that's no different, or some star person that we've had. But it's really like the next, like the deeper part of your roster. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to be more selective with that. I had a kid in the office yesterday, and we were talking about some goals. And it's just a smaller margin for error. So you're talking about, like, if somebody's trying to score points in the top eight, the fifth through eighth, there's, instead of like six people for those four spots, there's 15 people for those spots. And so it makes it, you know, you have to try to really, you know, do a better job of all those kids. But there's no magic into figuring out who the best people are.
Right.
You know, it's impossible to go, well, this kid's going to be an All-American.
Well, I mean, if you're really good at developing kids, I mean, you can develop all of them.
Yeah, sarcastic.
They're all going to be great.
Exactly. But, like, some of our greatest athletes, you know, are kids from Bueller, Kansas, or Cheney, or, you know, maybe from around the city. And we get some kids from other places, too. But and I think you've probably seen that. You have kids that did things, or two kids come at a certain level at the same, and then one kid gets better and one kid doesn't. But, you know, that's always, you can never predict how that's going to go. So, and getting into like recruiting, which I think is an interesting thing about how you're recruiting, I think probably have to rely more on, you know, technology or different ways. So if you're at University of Oregon and you're Robert Johnson and you're the head coach and you call a kid on the phone, well, if he answers, that's a good thing to ask. But if you contact that person or they know that you're interested, that's a whole nother world of recruiting than what you're going through. Like, how do you use technology and how do you, you know, do everything you can to get a recruit? What's the secret to friends' success recruiting that way, I guess?
Well, I can't give away everything. But
I want to know.
Exactly. But, I mean, yeah, social media has been probably 75% of our recruiting over the last couple of years. And that's something that has even changed within itself of what we've seen, kind of the shift of the more popular social medias on how we can contact kids. Where when I was at Pratt 9 years ago, Facebook was like the only thing I could really use.
Right.
And that's what I was trying to get a hold of kids, because how am I supposed to find a kid's phone number that I don't know? I don't know their coach. I'm 22 years old. It's my first coaching job. I don't really have any connections at that point. So,
well, it was, I recruited before Facebook.
Right.
Could you imagine? You actually had to call people.
Exactly. That sounds awful.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a thing where, I mean, I brought my list of the Kansas State track meet and I was going to go through and I was going to start searching for kids. And I would send them a direct message and say, hey, I'm Coach Davis with Pratt Community College. I do the same thing now with Friends University. And you try to get a phone number. That's the number one thing, is if you can get a phone number. Back then, I called them. Now I'm texting them. That's yeah, the thing that they get their attention the quickest.
So you're texting more than calling?
Yes. We tried.
Do you call first? Do you text first? How do you?
I will always text first, because.
Is this the same thing you do with a girl that you would meet?
Like, well,
Does it follow the same?
I mean, you got to follow the same path. It's very, very similar, because okay, you're recruiting them to hang out with you, recruiting them to come run for you.
Yes.
But it was. What we found out is kids don't like to answer the phone if they don't know who's calling.
Correct. Unknown number.
Unknown number. They're, yeah. And especially, I mean, I haven't changed my phone number since I was 16 years old. So I have a phone number
from. That picture they took of you. That's about what I look like. Okay.
Yeah. But so my phone number is from Smith Center, Kansas. And so people are like, hey, who's this coach? It's not a 316 number from Wichita. So,
right.
So I always text them first and say, hey, this is Coach Davis, blah, 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 blah. And then they usually respond, and they're either very excited or they're not excited. And that's kind of the first gauge of hey, am I going to go after this kid or not? And then after that, we set up a phone call. I say, hey, I want to talk to you on the phone and get to know you, and let's start this recruiting process and see if you're a good fit.
So I don't want this to sound, you know, negative, but it might. So if you say, I'm a coach at Friends University, mm-hmm, how often does somebody not even know what Friends University is out of 10? How many times does somebody... I've never even known there's a school called Friends. What a weird name for a school.
And there's kind of a weird balance between us recruiting our in-state kids and us recruiting our out-of-state kids. So if we're recruiting an out-of-state kid, there's about a 90% chance they have no idea who we are.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they're excited because they're being recruited.
Mm-hmm.
And we've tried to attack the idea of recruiting some of the kids that are really good out-of-state early when they're in juniors, because we might be the first school that contacts them. So we could be LSU or we could be Friends University. They're going to be excited to be getting a message from a coach.
Right.
And then a lot of the times those kids are saying, hey, you were the first coach that got a hold of me. You're the first coach that believed in me and reached out to me. And we've used that to our advantage a little bit. But, I mean, my first couple of years at Friends, I would talk to kids from Wichita that didn't know who Friends University was. And I'm like, you know the big clock tower that you drive by on Kellogg? Yeah, that's us. Like, come by and check us out. We're trying to build a great track program. And
now, obviously, you guys have had success. I'm assuming that has helped at least locally. There's coaches that know. If the kids aren't paying attention in high school, these probably some of the high school coaches are aware.
Right.
You guys are having good success.
And I tried to figure out, hey, who are some of the elite programs that are close to Wichita? Let's try to keep some kids at home. Let's try to build some relationships with those coaches where – a lot of those high school coaches are becoming more knowledgeable where they understand, hey, if I have this kid, he's more of a Wichita State kid, but I'm going to say, hey, this is where the kids would be a good fit for Friends. Then if you do that year after year, it turns into some of those high school coaches having a list in their head. And when I get a hold of them, they say, oh, yeah, here's two or three kids you should contact. They would be a good fit for you. We've seen what you've done the last couple of years.
Coach Rainbolt sucks. He didn't know what he's talking about. Wichita State.
I wouldn't say that.
So, obviously, it's been a good – which Friends has been a good fit, it seems like, for you. Because you, like you said, bounced around a little bit, mm-hmm, and then you've settled here. And now you're in Wichita, and you're the head coach. And obviously, you got that raised to $2.8 million. So $2.8 thousand dollars
yeah, per month.
That's pretty good.
Right.
So, obviously, you like Wichita. You're not a Wichita guy growing up. I didn't grow up in Wichita. I love Wichita. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what is it about Wichita that you have liked? And, you know, I'm assuming if you didn't like it, you would have been searching to go somewhere else and could have gone somewhere else probably.
Right. I mean, Wichita for a small town Kansas kid is like New York City. So, I mean, I grew up in towns of 500 people.
Probably for
1,000 people.
For our listeners or I guess our people watching that aren't from Wichita, maybe like a nice view of the skyline. That would be a, because there's actually the, or Keeper of the Plains. What would be like the most picturesque part of Wichita, do you think would be?
I would say, yeah, if you're down by the river where you can see Keeper of the Plains off to one side, you can kind of see the, I guess, skyline if you wish.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not a lot of giant buildings downtown.
But it's a big city for a guy.
It's a big city for a guy from a small town. So to think about, I mean, we use that in a lot of our recruiting as well. Hey, there we go. Checking out some good photos there.
That, I think the most famous one, probably that third one, the Keeper of the Plains. That's a...
Yeah.
I mean, I know, that seems like a picture I've taken. That's,
right.
You know,
and that's
awesome, cool
I mean,
place.
We use some of that stuff in our recruiting as we'll send out a couple, hey, enjoy Wichita, explore Wichita while you're here, and kind of the booming stuff that happens here with the concerts that are coming to town and now the new deal with the baseball team coming. I mean, we blast that stuff to our recruits because when we... At Friends, a lot of NAIA schools are in smaller cities. Mm-hmm. So we kind of have the advantage of being in a town of 500,000 people where
right.
we can say, hey, if you need jobs, you need internships, you want to go eat somewhere besides the Sonic downtown, like
right.
we can kind of blow that up a little bit.
You know, I always have this conversation, not only with like kids we recruit, but with kids that are on the team that aren't from here, that don't understand what there's to do here.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say... What I always say is that Wichita is like a big city. Like if you were to go to Chicago or if you were to go to, well, I'm from Cincinnati, whatever. It's got all the same stuff. It's got way less of it. So if you want to go to a comedy club, we got a comedy club. Mm-hmm. If you want to go see professional sports, if you want to go see a concert, if you want to do any, you want to see a play, a musical.
Right.
You know, you can do that here.
Go to the melodrama.
Yeah, exactly. Or Century 2. What was the one? What was that?
Book of Mormon. Yeah.
Like that was, you know, awesome. And but you don't have the traffic problems.
Exactly.
And
crime
is
really
lower.
Cheap to live.
And it's much cheaper to live here.
Right.
Yeah. And so I think of the best of both worlds kind of a, mm-hmm. a thing there. And there's a lot of jobs and all that kind of stuff. So I try to promote that now. Like a 18-year-old kid doesn't care about half of that stuff or three
right.
quarters of that stuff. They go, like, you know, where can I eat? Where can I play video games? You know, where can I hang out with my friends and do stuff. But mm-hmm. I think as you get older, you appreciate Wichita more. And so you mentioned like the, you know, living here and finding, you know, I think like if you're talking about your job and figuring out what you want to do in life, like you're 30 years old, you just turned 30, right?
Correct.
So I'm a little bit older than you. I'm not going to say how old, but I think right about then for me, I started thinking about like, okay, I get serious about what I'm going to do with my life.
Right.
And I think maybe you've figured that out. But I think that when I was 20s, I was more idealistic about, okay, I want to coach, and I'm going to be coaching at this major big program, and I'm going to, you know, have a bunch of Olympians, and every you
right.
know, I'm going to do this. And I think it changes as you get older, and the – whether your goals in life or whatever, the things that are important seem to be different,
mm-hmm.
even though you're still within the same, you know what I'm talking about?
Right. Absolutely.
And I think when you end up, I never thought I'd be in Wichita for 13 years,
mm-hmm.
but that's a big part of it because I like Wichita and I like living here and there's stuff to do and I you
right.
know, enjoy. So I got when I was in, puts in perspective because when I was in college, so I worked at the golf course, the Kent State golf course in the
Ooh.
Summer. And you know, you get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and you're out there mowing the greens. Did you ever work at a golf course?
I did.
Okay. So you know what I'm talking about. And I did it one summer and you'd work, you know, all morning. Man, it was so early in the morning. I'm not a morning person. And so you would mow these greens and you would, you know, weed eat or whatever.
Right.
Be done by like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, which was awesome.
Right.
But, I remember there was a whole bunch of college kids that would work there. And then there would be a few people that were full-time guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, this was pre-cell phone. So I worked in the 90s at the golf course.
What's that mean?
And so you had to talk to people.
Oh.
You had to, like, the people you worked with, you had to actually talk to these people.
Right.
and get to know them. Mm-hmm. And I remember talking to this guy, and he was the guy. He mowed the fairways, and he did all this stuff. And I was this young, stupid college kid, obviously just trying to make some extra money, and he was there permanently. And
that was his life.
Yeah, and I made some kind of comment like, well, like, what do you want to do someday? Like, this isn't it, right? And he understood I was stupid asking that question, but he loved it. And he was like, this is it. I love mowing grass. And I love, you know, I make good money. And I love manual labor. He likes, it's like a workout
being
for
outside.
Him. Being outside, like a golf course is beautiful.
He takes pride in his product, I'm sure.
Exactly.
Those things.
And he like, he makes his money. And then he like goes out on the weekends and he buys, he goes, has drinks with his friends,
right.
And like he loved that. And
hometown hero.
That was probably the first time I ever thought about, okay, success or happiness is not obviously the same thing for every single person.
Right.
So like you could be at Friends University or Wichita State or LSU or wherever and obviously any job career like that and be happy within that situation. And as long as it's a good situation. You know, like we've had people wonder how our staff stays together. Mm-hmm. And it's because we just have a lot of fun and we like each other.
I feel like that's not common, especially for a Division I school. And I feel like we've talked about that a little bit before. But
yeah,
what, you guys have been together for 7, 8, 9 years? Some of you,
I don't even know. Like Kirk Hunter is the newest staff member on our, I think he's his eighth year here. And he's by 5 years. Newer
right.
than anyone else. So everyone else has been 13 years or more.
It'd be interesting to know how that kind
it's
of
incredible,
compares
really.
To some other
but I think part of it
schools of where they're at with their staff. Because I feel like you just hear about the turnover all the time. I mean, every summer we're
hanging out
and we're checking out the hay.
Oh, my gosh.
50 this new summer. Track jobs open this summer. And everybody's hopping around all over the place. So.
Well, I think, you know, you find something you like. And this could be you as well as a head coach. But there's a lot of other jobs out there. And you got to be careful because some of those jobs aren't supported very well
right.
by the school, or you hear horror stories about people they work with, they don't get along. Like, I'm not going to call anybody out, but I definitely talk to coaches, and they're
right.
just miserable within their staff. And they're at these major programs, and they have some great success, but, man, it's a frustrating daily existence, and we don't have that, so mm-hmm. I'm very thankful.
Yeah, and that's something where you kind of go through your career, and I had – no idea what was going to come of being a track coach when I got my first job. So I'm thinking, hey, I didn't know how to recruit. I didn't know what I was doing. So thankful to Friends University for giving a 23-year-old kid a shot at coming in and kind of running a program. But there was some bumps and bruises the first couple years of me figuring out how do I sell Friends and how do I sell myself, which I think is a lot of it. And trying to build a staff with a very minimal budget and trying to find
right.
part-time assistant coaches and people that can help me build a program. But
that's got to be fun to try to figure that out, though.
It is.
Because you're in charge.
It's a blast. But then you get to the point where we had some success, and I started to figure out what was working. And then some of those other jobs open up, and you think, oh, if I had success here, can I have success here? And you think, hey, Division I's the dream. If you're a track coach, you want to go coach Division I. And then – like you said, I've been at the junior college level. I've been at the Division II level. And so I'm applying for different jobs and figuring out, hey, could I be a good fit here? Could I be a good fit here? And having mentors like yourself and being able to talk to people, hey, it's the truth, to figure out.
You mean this isn't the first time we've ever met?
No, it's not. Okay. I think we've known each other for a while. But
if you were to see us on Saturday night after a track meet, we sit there and talk and ignore the world, pretty much.
Pretty much.
If we were sitting together, so this is what happened. So
My girlfriend doesn't like it very much.
Yeah.
She's like, you can hang out with Wise for a couple hours, and I'll hang out with you tomorrow.
I come back from Arkansas. You come back from small town Kansas, wherever
right.
you're at.
Yeah.
It's 11
hey,
o'clock.
We go to Arkansas, too.
Right.
Don't throw us under
And we sit there, and we're comparing our meats and
right.
talking. And there could be literally supermodels on both sides of us.
It's track and field time.
You don't care.
We don't care. And that's when you know, I mean, you find people that are passionate about the same things as you. And
right.
it doesn't matter what level you're at. I mean, we could be talking to a junior high coach and we'd be
right.
having the same conversation because we have the same love for track and field. And
yeah.
we could be talking to Kurt Ryerson and he'd be excited talking about the road racing team that's going on. And
Carl Lewis.
Carl Lewis, right? We'll get him down here. And sing some karaoke.
Oh, national anthem, maybe. Awesome. Carl coming to Wichita in May for everyone, just so you know, the conference championship. I got a funny Carlos story from the other day. So,
well, I feel like you should share.
We're having a recruiting meeting, and in our staff. First of all, for those of you who don't know, Carl Lewis is possibly one of the greatest athletes in the history of the world. There's Carl.
No big deal.
I think that's a recent picture. Carl still looks like he's 30 years old. He looks like you, like in terms of age.
He looks better than I do.
He's much more fit.
Exactly.
And he's like 57 years old now. And guy won 9 gold medals, and he now is the sprint coach at Houston, which means I compete and recruit against him. And
that's an even battle.
Yeah, yeah. I was all conference in the 4x1 in college, and he won 9 gold medals. But anyways,
Kent State speed suits.
We're having a recruiting meeting, and our director of ops, Rob Garcia, he opens the door and he goes, "Hey, there's somebody." There's Carl. Jeez,
he looks the same.
Oh man, what a stud! And so we're having a meeting. Rob opens the door and says, "Hey, there's some guys here that want to say hi." And
somebody off the street.
In pops Carl Lewis, and they were out here recruiting. And
tell them to get out of Wichita.
I know.
Go back to Texas.
I know. And they wanted to see the track because their conference meet's going to be here in May. And so they just stopped by to check out the track.
Well, you've talked about how outside Carl Lewis has your guys' stadium record.
He has the long jump record. And I asked him, I go, "Do you remember competing? How many times did you compete here? Do you remember that?" And he goes, he remembers. He had been struggling, actually, he said. And he wanted to jump 27 feet, and he jumped like 27.6 or something. Oof. And so, yeah, that was kind of interesting. But it was funny because we're having a recruiting meeting, and we've got, like, all of our prospects listed. And he didn't know. He just walked into our meeting.
Turned the boards around.
We had a couple of good volunteer coaches that switched those boards around. So I'm going to go to Houston. I'm going to try to do the same thing. I'm just going to pop in.
Just pop in the office.
Yeah.
"Hey, guys, just want to check out
the facility." And they'll be like, who are you? Yeah.
You're like, "Oh, exactly. I'm John Wise."
So,
well, when you look at Carl, I guess that's always something that I wonder. I mean, he competed for Houston.
Correct. And Leroy Burrell, who's the head coach,
by
the way.
Leroy
Burrell, they were teammates together. So they were on the world record.
Those guys had to have been outstanding athletes when they were in high school. For them to go, or were they not? I mean, I guess I haven't looked back. I'm guessing so with where they're at now. But Houston, I guess, wouldn't be the program I would say, "Oh, one of the best high school long jumpers in the country, do you go to Houston?" Do you know what drew them there?
So they're both from Philadelphia. And kind of another interesting story. So Carl Lewis had jumped about 25 feet in high school. So he was, or maybe a little bit better, but I think he was jumping around 25 feet. And so he was getting recruited. I mean, that was in the 70s. So he was getting recruited by a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you know this or not, this is a pretty very interesting detail. He went on a recruiting visit to the University of Kansas, and his host athlete was Steve Rainbolt.
Really?
He was the host athlete for Carl Lewis.
And I don't believe you.
That's the story Coach Rainbolt says.
Okay.
He's our head
coach. I've heard a lot of Rainbolt stories.
Yes. And they did not go to Kansas, but Tom Tellez was the coach at Houston. Mm-hmm. And if you read Carl Lewis's books and things like that.
He's the sprint coach of the gods, pretty much.
Yeah, there's gurus of sprinting in the world of track and field, and he was one of them. And that was the reason. He wanted to go get coached by Tom Tellez. He wasn't – Houston
wasn't
was not –
wasn't about Houston.
Yeah, and then, like, I think, you know, Louis Burrell was from a similar area. That ended up being a little connection. And they went there, and then that was, like, the best they had been. And then they kind of had been decent. Leroy took over the program. And last year was by far the best year they've ever had. They got third at the national meet.
And they were chasing a national title.
Yeah, and so it's not like Houston's been great all along. And they had these really good athletes back then. And they had a lot of them. Like, there was a bunch of guys that went to Houston because of those guys. And then once they graduated, it kind of maybe – they went back to earth a little bit. Now they're – one of the best teams in the country. We're trying to figure out how to beat them.
And yeah, I mean, you look at their recruiting class coming in this year, and we've talked about that a little bit.
Yeah.
And you're like, where do we go? What do we have to do recruiting wise to kind of compete with that?
Yeah, so it's a fun challenge. It really is, because it's difficult. And I want to recruit guys like me, but I can't recruit guys like me anymore. Like, I'm not good enough. Like, I was okay, and I've got to recruit guys that are better than me. Now, I shouldn't say that, because I think I could have contributed and I could have helped, but it is a little different.
I could have been the manager, you know, get the camera out there at that level probably.
So we talked about track for a while, so let's change gears a little bit and maybe hit a bunch of different things, because you're kind of a worldly guy.
Well,
and
American guy.
thing, something I love, and I think that maybe you're starting to get a little bit of a liking for, mm-hmm. is traveling.
Yeah.
And you did an interesting trip this summer.
I did.
Maybe we could pull up a map of the United States, because I think describing where you went, if you just had a map of the United States, might be easier.
We could kind of do that.
So if you're listening instead of watching, you have to just imagine a map of the United States.
Right.
Maybe even the western half even. But yeah, you just click on one of those maps, and Cole can kind of maybe start. Yeah, let's start in Kansas.
Okay.
That's where we're at. And explain what you did. And it was you and your girlfriend.
Yep.
And you guys went on this epic road trip.
I was trying to figure out if I actually liked her or not. So I was like, hey, let's be stuck in a vehicle for 10 days together and just kind of see what happens at this point. But I'd never really traveled west. I'd been a lot east. I mean, I'd been to Colorado a couple times. My brother lived in Seattle. I'd kind of been up in that area a little bit. But I was really interested in seeing kind of, I guess you'd say, the beauty of the Midwest,
yeah.
and kind of going through the national park scene and kind of seeing some of those things. I'd never been to the Grand Canyon. I'd never been to a lot of those big national parks. So I basically, thankful to Pinterest, I know it sounds a little silly, but we started researching big road trips and routes to mm-hmm. take and things to see and national parks that you got to go to. And we kind of just started mapping things out of like, hey, let's go down to the Grand Canyon. And then we started finding a lot of places in Utah. We're like, wow, there's a lot of national parks in Utah. And people don't think about Utah a lot. Right.
So, where'd you start? You started in
Wichita. We started in Wichita. We ended up kind of going all the way west into Colorado. We stayed at the Sand Dunes National Park.
Which city would that work? What part of Colorado did you go in?
So we're way, way southwest Colorado, down by Durango.
Okay.
But we went to the Sand Dunes National Park. We actually had plans to hike a 14er down there on our first day, but we got about 12,000 feet, and it started lightning and storming. Ooh. So you're not supposed to be hiking up
the
mountain when it starts storming. So we ended up going down. We had our car broke down three times trying to get up the mountain. So we had a rough first day. But after Colorado, we kind of merged down through New Mexico. We kind of went through the Four Corners. There's a little monument there in between.
Did you stand in all four states at the same time?
We didn't. I didn't want to be like everybody else that does that same thing. But we drove by and looked at it. Then we went down into Arizona, and we went to the Grand Canyon, which I knew it was a huge tourist trap, but it's something that
you gotta
I was like,
it.
You got to see it.
If you go to Paris, you got to see the Eiffel Tower.
You got to see the Eiffel Tower. Yeah. So we go to the Grand Canyon, and I was absolutely floored at there was probably, out of 10 people there, 8 of them were probably international.
Okay, yeah.
And that was something that I didn't even really think about. I was like, oh, it's probably just people from around the United States.
Check you out.
Hey, that's actually at Horseshoe Bend, which is part of the Colorado River. It's kind of a ways from the Grand Canyon, but one of the most amazing things of the trip where I saw that. But the Grand Canyon is one of those things that is just absolutely breathtaking. People always use that word to describe it.
And
just to walk up to the edge, because everything's just flat and you're just walking around, and then all of a sudden you walk up and it's just, wow. So it was one of those things where we hiked down it a little bit. We didn't have a lot of time. We were trying to see as many things as we could in 10 days. So we did about a mile hike down to a place called Ooah Point and then hiked back up. So the hike down was really fun.
Was the hiking hard? Were you like able to do it without, you know, I know you got real fit for your trip.
Oh my goodness. not quite, but the hike down was great.
Yeah.
But then we turned around and we only went maybe a half a mile down into the canyon, and hiking back up, I mean, it was tough. I mean, because you're basically zigzagging straight down and try to get into some points. But then you see like a 12-year-old like blowing past you, and you're like, okay, I should probably not be.
And you're like, let's take a break and take some pictures.
Right? Like, I packed some sandwiches. We should stop now.
So then you went up like towards Utah, right?
Yeah, we went up through Utah. Probably my favorite stop of the entire trip was Zion National Park.
Yeah, which I've never been there.
I loved the movie Jurassic Park growing up. I mean, that was just a thing. I mean, kind of the era that I was at. But it felt like you were walking through Jurassic Park for most of the time.
Oh.
And this is actually us hiking through Zion right there. So these switchbacks were not fun. There was 20 of them in a row.
Look at that.
Kind of went. But it's just breathtaking views as you're walking through there. But we hiked a trail there called Angel's Landing, which took us about 2.5 to 3 hours to get up. But about the last half mile of the hike is just chain links that you're holding on to because you're basically going straight up rocks.
What was the chances of death?
There was signs everywhere the entire time you're hiking up this thing that say, hey, this many people have died this year. Like, watch what you're doing.
Awesome.
All this kind of stuff. But nice. When you get to the top, it was absolutely worth it. And that was probably one of our favorite hikes of the entire trip. So as we've gotten into our step challenges in years past, we might get into that a little bit.
Oh,
but,
my gosh.
I mean, our goal was, hey, let's try to see how many steps we can get each day. And,
okay.
And we were flirting with 20,000 steps, which –
like 10 miles a day.
10 miles a day, pretty much. Yeah. So over the 10, yeah, there's a picture from Zion.
But representing the
Emporia State there a little bit. But
Under Armour, yeah, there we go.
I put a hand over that. But we're Nike now.
Right. Yeah, I heard that.
But, yeah, Utah was probably our favorite stop of the trip. But
so then you went from Utah.
We went north.
East? Oh, okay.
Yep, we went north. We stayed. We
slept north in Utah, like Wyoming, Montana. What's
we went up into we clipped Idaho a little bit, and then we went over into Wyoming. We wanted to see Yellowstone. That was something that we wanted to go check out the geysers and kind of we saw some elk and saw some bison and did some different things up there. Saw some wildlife. Then we went up all the way across the state of Wyoming into South Dakota.
You can pretty much drive like as fast as you want, can't you, out there?
Yeah, I mean, and we were surprised. I'd never seen the speed limit go up. I think it was 80 or 85 as we were going through Wyoming. So it felt like I was on the Autobahn out there just kind of flying. But we saw the Badlands in South Dakota. My girlfriend used to work in Sioux Falls, so we stopped there. And it was – we tried to see as much as we could see in 10 days
with spending
the least amount of money as possible.
How many miles did you travel?
It was right about 4,000.
You drove 4,000 miles in 10 days.
4,000 miles in 10 days. We slept in the vehicle or camped every night except for two. We stayed in hotels, so we kind of
took a shower.
Yeah, that was. We stopped at some. And that was the thing is, with technology these days, I mean, we basically found websites of free campsites. And
yeah.
Things got a little sketchy at times when it's 1 o'clock in the morning and we're trying to find a place to sleep and we're just parking on the side of the road, but we found free rest stops. And
I think that's part of the adventure.
And it was. And that's something we wanted to do. And, I mean, we did this entire trip over 10 days, traveled 4,000 miles and spent a couple $100 a piece to do it. And we got to see some things that we'll probably never see again. And so it was a cool experience.
One of the most fun things, I went to Iceland like 2 years ago. And I rented
a van. To Utah and you go to Iceland.
Right.
That's the Division I budget to the NAIA budget.
Exactly.
So you guys understand.
And I took a camper van and by myself.
You look like a camper van guy.
I guess. Camper van bound by the river.
Correct.
And, oh, there's Iceland.
Chris Foley.
That was 20,
that's when
20 pounds
John
ago.
Decided not to shave the
beard. Yeah, I did. I thought I'm going to Iceland. I'm going to look like a guy from Iceland.
You have the soft smile a little bit there.
I hate selfies, by the way. Which
well, it is September.
I am going to talk about that in a second. But I just drove until I got tired, and I pulled over where I could for $5, slept in the van, woke up, drove the next day, and it was awesome. Like so much better than staying in a hotel.
Did you feel like you were on another planet? That's what I always hear from people that go to Iceland. I mean, just kind of the scenery and what you're going through.
Iceland was crazy. That was one of my favorite places. Those black
is that a black beach?
That was black sand beach. And
is it sand or is it rock?
It's sand. It's a different kind of texture than the sand you would think of at like, you know, a beach.
Can you compare it to something?
For just
the people out
a
there
trying
to really
thicker,
feel the story.
A little, like... It'd be a little bit thicker. Yeah, I don't know how to explain how that feels, but
well, we're track coaches, so we don't have to.
Yeah. So, that was awesome. Not to talk about my travel, but that trip made me want to go to New Zealand, and I went to New Zealand this summer. And because it was just like, you go like you're talking about going to Utah or Grand Canyon, which is crazy, and then I go to a place like Iceland, and it makes me want to go to New Zealand. That's actually.
Is that Los Angeles?
It might be Malibu. Yeah. So this is just like a series of pictures, but keep going through those.
In-N-Out
Burger.
There'll
be some more. I definitely ate the In-N-Out Burger.
The 4x4?
Times. I maybe went a triple. That's New Zealand. So like Iceland and New Zealand, if anybody is into that kind of stuff, like crazy.
So
like,
yeah, that picture there, I mean, tell me a little bit about your skydiving experience. I mean, just real quick.
That's Queenstown, New Zealand. which is kind of where all the skydiving and bungee jumping kind of
extreme sports
happened.
Capital of the world.
So I go, I've never done it. So I'm like, okay, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it where it started. And I jumped out of one of those planes.
How long did you fall for?
You could go 9,000, 12,000, or 15,000 feet up. And I'm like, well, I'm going to do it. I'm going to go all the way to the top, you know, 15,000 feet. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to, it was a minute of free fall.
Oof.
And then
how long did it feel?
Of gliding. That minute of free fall, I've never, people are probably listening that have gone skydiving and understand, you're not ready for that drop. They take pictures of you skydiving.
Mm-hmm.
Or like they'll, you know, flying and people are smiling at the camera. It's not like that. You are hurtling through space down to the ground amazingly fast.
And
it feels exactly like that.
And we can talk about the fact that this wasn't like a nice, comfortable, warm climate.
Oh,
that
my gosh. It's winter. You can see I took pictures. It's winter because it's the Southern Hemisphere. It was 8 degrees that day. And it was so cold that they said, well, it might be too cold to jump. But they were right on the edge. I'm like, that's probably not good.
Right. My first experience.
And we go up, and every 1,000 feet you go up, it goes a degree down, they said. It was like in the negative when we jump out of the plane. And the guy, you know, it's like a tandem jump, so you're strapped to another guy.
It's like you have a guy in a backpack on
and
your back.
And he's talking to you, and he's telling you what to do. And I go, how many times have you done this? He goes, only 6,000. 6,000?
Well, he's jumping multiple times a day.
10 times a day. He did 10 jumps a day and for every day. And I said, is this exciting for you? Is this just boring?
Right.
He goes, no, every jump is exciting, but
like every jump's
I'm not
a little
scared.
Different.
I'm not scared, yeah. You know. So anyways, once you pull the chute, it's like 5 minutes of looking at the mountains and the scenery is unbelievable.
Right.
So I'd recommend it at least once to do it, but to go do it somewhere like that, not to do it.
So that
no offense
cold
to anyone here,
traveling
here.
That fast down. I mean, I think about if you're driving 80 miles an hour down the interstate and you just stick your head out the window. Like, is it?
It would be.
I don't know if you've ever done that.
Like driving down a mountain 80 miles an hour and sticking your head out the roof in the middle of winter. That's what it sounds like. So
that sounds really.
Well, where are you wanting to travel next?
Well, next, I've decided. I mean, we don't get to do a lot of traveling during the school year because, hey, we're track coaches, so
right.
We don't get to take
time.
Well,
we travel,
off.
But it's not that kind of travel.
Not for recreational purposes. Yes. So I just kind of decided, hey, every summer, kind of like how you've done, I kind of got this from you a little bit, but, hey, I need to take a trip every summer and just kind of get out and experience some stuff where we go through the grind of the outdoor track season. All of a sudden, June hits, and I'm like, hey, I just want to get away and relax for a little bit before I got to get back on the recruiting grind. But right now we're talking about traveling to Canada would be kind of our next step. There's some Banff National Park is one mm-hmm. that we've done a lot of research on that we'd love to go up there. We actually just booked a cruise. I've never been on a cruise before, so I'm excited about doing that next summer. We're going to leave down
cruise?
By Florida, and we're going to go into Cuba for a little bit.
Kind of
go through that
Cuba.
A little bit. So I'm excited.
That's intriguing.
They gave us three options of cruises, and they all kind of – some of them went to Mexico. I've been to Mexico before, and one had Cuba on there. I'm like, let's do that. That sounds awesome. Like, it just sounds like a different situation.
And people that are listening go, man, that's crazy. Like, these kind of trips aren't that expensive, really.
No.
Compared to, like, if you were to go to New York City or you to go to L.A. Like,
it's not that
cheaper.
Different. And, yeah, I mean, it's all-inclusive. All your food's paid for. All the activities are paid for. You get credits to do different things. I mean, we basically just have to get ourselves there.
Yeah.
And so right now I'm trying to convince Rachel that we should road trip there and see some stuff and then go on the cruise.
I like how you're thinking.
But I don't know if I'm going to be able to convince her to do that. So all the way down to the southern tip of Florida, and it might be a little bit hard convincing. But
maybe you could do like a train or something to get there, something different.
I've never traveled by train, so that's a little intriguing.
Yeah, I'm taking a recruiting trip coming up in a couple weeks, mm-hmm. and I'm going to D.C. and New York City. And I'm going to train from D.C. to New York City.
How far of a train ride is
it's like a 3-hour trip.
That's not too bad.
But
it's like driving to Kansas City.
But I was told don't drive to New York City. Like it's.
Well, I feel like a 3-hour drive would be a 9-hour drive. If
it'll
you're
cost
stuck
probably
in traffic.
$900 in tolls, and there won't be a place to park when I get there.
Yeah, don't do that. Just get an Uber.
Okay, I wrote a couple things down.
A couple.
Yeah, it was like we maybe finish up with some quick hitters. Because I want your opinion on some things.
Okay.
College football season.
Mm-hmm.
Four teams in the playoff. Is that what do you like that?
It's not enough.
Not enough. How many teams should be in the playoffs?
I think no matter how many teams you put in the playoff, people are going to complain that they need to be more teams in the playoff. Because you look at March Madness, and there's 64 teams.
68
and now. They're 68, yeah. And everybody's like, oh, we should have been in.
Number 69's mad.
Number 69's mad. So you put 8 in, and number 9 and number 10 are going to be mad. Like you look at last year with UCF going undefeated, mm-hmm. and not making it into the Final Four. It's like, hey, they could have been the best team in the country. I mean, they're naming themselves co-national champions, which – I mean, that's kind of a thing to kind of promote yourself, and I understand that a little bit as well. But at the same time, they probably truly feel that way.
What do they got to do?
They're Division I.
Like, they can't win a national title. So I go to Kent State. Kent State is in the same division as Alabama and Ohio State. Kent State goes undefeated, which they never will because Kent State sucks. But if they were, they could not win a national title. What other sport in the world do you win all your games and can't win the championship? Is there another one besides Division I FBS college football?
I don't think so.
That's and there's got to be a way that's that can't
and
happen.
So I know it's got to be a struggle for those coaches because the only thing they can do is try to get better teams to schedule them, and they're not.
But even like
games.
UCF had pretty good teams.
They were playing pretty good. I mean, there was a couple ranked teams in the American Conference,
right?
And I guess you could have seen this firsthand a little bit of now these teams are switching conferences to try to give them a better chance to do well. So Wichita State basketball says, hey, we weren't getting love in the Missouri Valley. Let's go to the American Conference.
And, and
now it's you see a UCF join the SEC, but they don't have the money to do that. The SEC doesn't want them. Teams from the SEC don't want to play them in the regular season because they know how good they are. There's a chance they could lose.
Another reason why track is the best sport because a friend's university high jumper can go to the Olympics. I mean, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
You're good enough, you're good enough. It doesn't matter what uniform you got on.
And, I mean, that's far-fetched for a lot of the kids that we recruit.
But it's
always
possible.
It's always the biggest laugh that I get in myself when I recruit a kid and I pull up their Twitter account and it's a guy that's jumping 6'2 in the high jump and they got Rio 2016
because
they want to go to the Olympics.
I would have put the same thing in junior high.
I know you.
What's 2020? LA 2020?
LA 2020. But that's the thing. At the same time.
How many teams for the playoffs?
I say you go 8.
I say 64.
I say you double it.
I say go all the way to 64. Mike Leach did the. Mike Leach, who's got to be the funniest college football guy.
He's a good guy.
He went on a rant that made sense with 64 teams.
He should come join our
next podcast. We could put a link to that somewhere on this podcast of Mike Leach's 10-minute rant about the college football playoffs from last year.
What do you think? I mean, where do you think it should
I go? Like the most teams. I like Mike Leach's idea. It was like 32 or 64 teams because you can have all your bowl games be meaningful. You can make your bowl games through your early rounds, and it becomes
the regular season gets shorter.
The regular season will be a little bit shorter, but play your conference games. You don't have as many of these early season games that don't mean anything.
Well, because even if you look at – I think it's even NCAA – Division I FCS that they get into
there's
a lot more games than that. I think there's 16
least,
or
32.
Something like that. And the NAIA, they go into like 24 teams. And Division III, they have a bunch.
And that was Mike Leach's point. He goes, in a comedic way.
Every level does it.
He talked about every way has figured it out except for Division I. Like, they can't figure it out. You know, they can't figure out how to have a playoff. But, like, the local high school teams figured out how to have a tournament to figure out the champion. You know,
you got districts and bi-districts and regionals and sectionals. And
so college basketball, you're a KU guy.
I am a KU
guy. How's KU
guy.
Basketball going to be? Are they going to be like, they're going to win the Big 12 like they do every year.
They're going to win the Big 12 and they're going to go after a national title.
And
Bill Self.
I know you're not a big Shocker hoops fan, but it's got to be one of the most intriguing seasons in recent history because it's an entirely new team. It's got to be, people are going to watch because that's, and if Wichita State makes the NCAA tournament as an example. Greg Marshall has to be considered one of the great coaches,
and
right?
I really believe exactly what you just said, that I've always kind of been the hater, I guess, of the Wichita State basketball teams in years past, just because when they went through the Missouri Valley, I was like, okay, the Missouri Valley, they were struggling in Missouri Valley games, but they had some luck in the NCAA tournament, and I was cheering for them once they got there. I wasn't cheering for them in that game. That one still hurts. But in the aspect, I was like, okay, is Marshall really bringing in these guys and really developing them? And that's what you said about this year. It's all new guys this year. If they go and they compete for a conference title and they go to the national tournament and they get into the Sweet 16 and they're rolling through, then he's one of the best coaches in the country right now. If you can do that in Wichita, Kansas at a mid-major Power 6
school.
Don't
say that around here,
Power 6.
Yeah. Right? Well, I think realistically, if they were at NIT, that would be a good year. I mean, just maybe these guys are going to be so much better.
That's the difference between Wichita State and KU.
I guess. Yeah.
And IT isn't a good year. Well, do you think they feel that way?
What was the last score of the last game? Okay. Exactly. All right. You mentioned AAA baseball in Wichita.
Mm-hmm.
What was the name? Can you guys pull up
the baby cakes?
The baby cakes. Then obviously they have to change that.
Well, I don't know if they have to, but
they're
going to.
Those of you who don't know, Wichita just got a AAA baseball team.
The Marlins.
The Florida Marlins. They haven't had affiliated baseball in a long time. They're going to.
I think it's 10 years.
Build a new stadium. There's a picture of what it could look like.
It's the first rendering.
And I'm not sure where that's at exactly.
It's the same place.
Is it? So yeah. It's just closer to the river. They took out the road. And
they're going to take out the road. And then what I heard is kind of down here on the bottom right is they have the city committed to build some big pedestrian bridge that kind of goes across the river.
Oh, yeah, I see the people walking across there.
But I think I've been saying it since I've lived here that they need to put more stuff on the river, and that would get people excited about getting down to the river, whether it's businesses or restaurants or bars or anything down there, just to get people around the river. All of a sudden you have kayaking businesses and you have things that kind of explode down there. So I think this could be the big first start. As you see, they're building some businesses around the outfield and places you can go and things you can do. So
that rooftop thing looks cool. I'm sure that's probably
Where you're going to move to next.
Yeah, that'll be the next apartment I live in.
Right.
But if you live in Wichita, I moved here 13 years ago. It's totally different downtown.
Yeah.
And all the different, and you can kind of see parts of the city starting to grow together.
Correct.
And eventually they'll all be probably. I'm not a city planner, but I would think there's a plan there for that to become one thing, and the baseball stadium is a huge part of that.
Mm-hmm.
And well, I'm from, like I said, grew up near Cincinnati, and when I grew up, they had Riverfront Stadium. It was the only thing on the river. Reds and the Bengals played there. They didn't have anything else. It was nothing to do down there. Now they built a new stadium for the Reds. They built a new stadium for the Bengals. They have a Coliseum down there.
Right.
They have concert places. They have all the, and it's like a whole new place. I went there in May for our conference championship, and we stayed on the other side of the river, and our kids walked across and had, like, there was so much stuff to do over there. And I think that could really be a big thing. And Wichita's kind of sneaky, getting sneaky cool.
Sneaky cool is the way to describe it.
Yeah.
And it's cool that it's the affiliated baseball where you have these guys that are
gonna
coming down from majors. And
you're going to see guys that are big stars.
Because I still have a Wichita Wranglers mini bat from going to games there. I mean, they were here, I think they left 10 years ago, and then they moved down to Arkansas. So it's cool to kind of have that atmosphere that'll come back. I think it's 2020.
What's a good name? What do you think of name? Because they were the Wranglers. They were the Arrows at one time, which is a, airplane kind of thing.
Right.
The Wing Nuts is an air.
Everybody's
reference.
Been kind of chasing after the airplane industry with a lot of.
Are they
going to
go that way, or are they going to do something?
I don't know. We had a conversation the other day of ideas of what they could do, but I think they need to do something with the river. I think that'd be kind of cool if river was in the name. So it's the Wichita River Monsters or something crazy like that.
Or
the Wichita Riverfest people is my personal favorite because we go down to Riverfest and you see the monsters.
What would that logo look like?
Right? Yeah. Somebody with a turkey leg and something else just kind of running down there. But
okay, it is September. Mm-hmm. A few years ago, we came up with an idea for No Selfie September.
Correct.
And I wrote a blog about it. There it is. Words from a wise guy. And
there it is.
This was kind of a joke. It might
have
been one of those.
Blog?
Like I said, four or five, maybe. but this one actually kind of went viral. The idea, it was kind of a joke, obviously, when we came up with it. But it came from a real place of being frustrated with selfies and young people taking selfies.
Right.
And I wrote this blog as a joke. And you came up with the idea of donating, if you take a selfie in September, to donate to the American Heart Association.
Yeah.
We know people in the news.
Uh-huh.
They got a hold of it. The American Heart Association found out about it.
Right.
This thing went crazy.
It kind of blew up a little bit.
I was doing interviews on television for this.
From an idea that we came up with at the stop. So.
Yeah, I know. And they tried to legitimize it, and I kind of went along with it for a little bit, and then it died out. But it is September, so we challenge everyone to not take a selfie for the remainder of the month,
right?
Which is difficult. I tried to challenge the kids on my team, and they're like, there's no way.
There's no way I can do it.
There's no way. It's
insane. I mean, with Snapchat and Instagram and everything that they're doing, FaceTiming, I mean, you're selfieing somebody right there.
Do you know what's crazy? There are people now. So you know how you have the filters for Snapchat and stuff like that that makes you look like a different person?
Right.
There are people that are trying to have plastic surgery to look like certain filters.
To look like, no.
They want to look like their filter. So they're changing their face to look like a filter.
Like they're that's putting a dog nose on.
No. Not a dog nose. Like, you know,
well, I mean,
how
I've seen the people that
it
like
changes
that
your complexion of your face.
Oh.
And people like that's a plastic surgery thing that they're trying to do now.
I want to look like the third swiped filter over. That's like the perfect of where I'd
it's
like
you go to the barber and you have like a picture of your haircut.
I'd really like to look black and white all the time. Like go back into the 1930s or something. I don't know.
Okay, so don't take a selfie.
No selfies for the month, or else we will comment hashtag no selfie September and you got to donate.
Okay, one a track question real quick.
More
Do you
track.
Think there should be a women's decathlon or should they stay with the heptathlon? You're a multi-event guy.
I'm a multi-event guy. I think the women's pentathlon is too easy.
Okay.
I don't think...
Indoor.
Indoors. I think the women need to move to the hep indoors.
Same as the men.
Same as the men.
Okay.
And that would be...
Would they pole vault?
That would be them pole vaulting.
Okay.
So I think if they move them to the hep indoors and stay with the hep outdoors for now, that could help the transition.
Eventually.
If people start training indoors wise and in the pole vault, then maybe down the road then it turns into the deck as well, because I just think the pents, no offense, but it's very easy.
Yeah, it's a one day compared to
it's a one day thing.
Yeah,
like we had a great athlete that was at Friends, and the only thing that's really not speed
Chelsea
power Green. Is the 800.
Yeah,
and that was an event she was really bad at for a while, but it's like, hey, if you're a good
but she was still national champion,
if you're a good if you're a good sprinter jumper, you can be really good because you can score a ton of points in the first four events, then you just got to get through the 800s.
I think the problem for us, they've talked about it in Division One, is that until it gets adopted internationally,
right?
Because you're going to lose people that want to come here to compete in it because they can't qualify to the Olympics.
Correct.
You know what I mean? So if the international committee would make it, but until then... You know, I don't think we'll have it. But you vote for at least a heptathlon indoor, maybe keep it.
I would vote for the hep indoor for sure. It's just they need to be challenged a little bit more.
Okay. Today, we're recording this on September 12th. Do you remember where you were on September 11th? You were 12 years old?
I was in junior high.
Junior high.
I was in junior high English class. And they pulled out we always got excited about the Rolly TV cart. We knew we were going to get to watch a video or something, but the teacher just kind of had a solemn look on her face.
So it already happened.
The principal came in and said, hey, you need to turn on the news. Like, don't worry about class right now. And we turned it on, and the first plane had already hit. And we're kind of watching it, and we don't know what's going on. I mean, I'm 12 years old, and we think, oh, there was an accident.
Oh, they didn't. A lot of people didn't, like, even the news people.
We just thought it was an accident. Like, oh, wow, this is a plane accidentally flew into the tower. And we were sitting there and watched the other planes. We're all just like, what's happening right now? And they canceled school the rest of the day. It was in the morning time, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure. And I remember they let us go home. They told our parents they can come pick us up. And and then, I mean, we're hearing about the Pentagon situation. We're hearing about everything else that's going on. And it's just, it's one of those things that it's, the tragedy of the lifetime that I grew up in of, hey, that's what everybody knows about, and that's what everybody remembers of, hey, it's 9/11. And I had the opportunity to go to New York when the towers were there, and I've had the opportunity to be there and see the monument, which is an amazing thing to go see, that I would have anybody, if you go to New York, to go check that out. But
I haven't been there since, so I'm hoping I can do that.
Right.
Go up there recently. Yeah, I was driving to work. I heard on the radio. And I was at Kent State. I was coaching at Kent State. And same thing. People on the radio thought they didn't know what was going on. Get there. I saw the second one.
Right.
And everybody was just kind of like dumbstruck. And then we had an optional track practice.
Right.
Like we were like, come if you want, you know, kind of a thing. Yeah, crazy. But anyways, that's interesting to live through that as you get older and start reflecting on those things. Okay, so we had a weight loss challenge that I want to talk about.
Can we move on to the next topic?
It's the one of the last topics.
Okay.
So the idea, so Jordan Peterson, for anybody who doesn't know, Jordan Peterson is this psychology guy from Canada. He's kind of controversial, but his daughter had this crazy
one of your favorite type of guys.
Yeah. He's a funny guy to listen to. Not really, but his daughter lost all this weight. She was kind of a psycho crazy girl, but a lot of things. So I go, hey, we should do this. And you're like, I think pretty much without thinking, said, okay, let's do that.
Correct.
And
I didn't realize how awful it was going to be. But.
And I made it 30 days. How long did you make it? Do you remember?
I think it was about 3.5, maybe 4. I made it about halfway through a day, and I was miserable. Like, I was absolutely
basically, so, there's no carbs, no sugars. That's the main thing.
Okay, let's be clear. It was a lot worse than that. Wise was saying, hey, it's no carb, no sugar, and then we read into it, and it was no everything. There was basically maybe 15 things that you were allowed to eat, and everything else was off limits. So it was...
You could eat meat.
And I am not the healthiest of eaters, so it was one of those situations where I was going 0 to 100 real quick, as they say, because I was struggling.
So you hear about people that have, like, addictions and struggle with withdrawals, but I've never seen a sugar withdrawal. Like,
oh, I had it bad. I had it bad. I mean, I was... My mood changed. I was getting headaches. Yeah. I was like having like caffeine withdrawals. I was going through all that kind of stuff. So, and I didn't see the immediate weight loss that you saw that kind of kept you in track, I think, a little bit. Because, I mean, even you, as the diet went on, it got easier, as you said.
It did.
Because you just got used to the fact that, hey, I'm not really eating for pleasure. Right. But you found some things that you liked, which were good. And you got to go shop at the health food store and things like that.
I go there all the time now. I love it.
Okay. Yeah.
It's good. Okay, last thing.
Hey, how much weight did you lose?
22 pounds in 30 days.
30 days,
and I've maintained it for since then, so it's been
22 pounds in 30 days. Yeah. So if anybody wants to know how to lose 20 pounds in 30 days, talk to John
Our
Wise.
Jumps coach, Heidi Yost, just did the same thing. Mm-hmm. She lost 11 pounds in 29. Now, she had half the amount that she's half of me. Lost 11 pounds in with one day to go. So today was she was eating ice cream.
So you say it works.
Breakfast. So what?
You say it works.
It does. Yeah, it works.
It's very strict, but it works.
Strict, yeah. So if you're interested, look up the...
Did you work out a lot while you were on it, but was this pure nutrition?
No, I just walked every day.
That's the thing. Hey, just eat healthy.
Yeah.
Abs are made in the kitchen, right?
Yes, exactly.
Not by getting 20,000 steps a day.
Correct. It's more about your nutrition.
Correct.
Okay, last thing. I love movies, and so I'd like to... finish each one of these with some movies. Have you seen any movies recently that you would recommend or that you would not recommend?
I haven't been to the movies much now that school's kind of getting going. I went to a couple this summer. I think it's one that you've seen too, but I saw A Quiet Place.
Yeah,
that was a movie that I thought was awesome. Like, I would recommend. And people think like, oh, it's a scary movie, and some people don't like scary movies, but it was just a different kind of suspenseful type movie. And I would recommend anybody to go kind of check that out. It's very, very different. I mean, just to think about sitting in a theater and it's dead quiet the entire time because people are so excited or nervous about what's going to happen next.
I thought that was one I wanted to see in a theater.
Right.
Because sitting at home by yourself, it's not the same. You're literally trying to stay silent with the people around you. So
it's about the theater experience.
It is.
Like we did with... The Room.
The Room. Greatest experience in the movies.
Hey, you ordered some stuff. I mean, we won't get into it a lot, but I'm excited to see if it actually ever shows up.
We do movie watching from time to time.
Tommy Wiseau
clothing. I hope we get some of his stuff. I ordered some stuff from him like months ago. It's still not coming. So here's the last five movies I've seen. I'm doing this kind of goofy thing. If you follow me on Snapchat, it's a limited following.
Give them your handle.
But I don't even know what it is. I don't even know. Look for me. If you're not on the track team, I might accept it.
Right.
I've got 600 movies or something. Oh, Tommy Wiseau, I just saw.
There he is.
Yeah, the man, Tommy Wiseau. What a man. But I've got about...
Kind of looks like Kurt.
So I'm doing this movie watching thing where I own a ridiculous amount of movies. You've added to my collection as you became a minimalist. And
correct.
I've got about 600 movies. My goal is 1,000 at some point. But I'm watching them alphabetically, and it's taken a couple years to get through a couple hundred.
Right.
And so I'm going alphabetically through the movies. And
a movie every night?
Well,
or close?
I bet it's three a week.
3 a week.
Something. You know, the weekends, it's hard to do on the weekends.
Right.
But the last five I've watched, so if you have any comments about this, I watched Big Trouble in Little China, which is Kurt Russell.
Absolutely.
That was I love
the front cover of that movie. It's just a great piece of artwork of him like standing over the city and looking all crazy like a cartoon and all that good stuff.
Great movie. And One of those that was
that's how you look like
was
after
not
your
marketed.
Diet,
right? Yeah. That girl, the girl behind him, was in Sex and the City. That was like the real promiscuous girl in Sex and the City.
Oh, really?
Yep, that was her. So that. Great movie. If you've never seen Big Trouble in Little China, so much fun. It bombed. It was a total bomb.
Wasn't good.
Lost millions of dollars. But it was the same guy that directed Halloween.
Really?
Yeah. So fun fact.
You're all about the directors and
yes,
the fun
I
facts. If you follow his Snapchat, he likes to give you lots of fun facts from the movies.
I watched Cannonball Run, which has our man
Burt Reynolds,
sadly passed away. Burt Reynolds obviously was Smokey and the Bandit, which as a kid for me
icon.
Was... Everybody loved Smokey and the Bandit. I mean, Burt Reynolds, are you old enough to understand how big of a star Burt Reynolds was?
And that
I mean,
was,
look at that guy.
To be honest, it was a little before my time, I'll be honest. But the mustache, everybody knows about the mustache.
Yeah.
And everybody knows about the Trans Am.
Is that Burt Reynolds or Colton?
That's true.
Colton Howard, one of our...
Burt didn't have the flavor saver and the soul patch going on underneath. But yeah, it was... I fell in love...
Didn't you buy a car?
...with the movies. I bought a 79 Trans Am. When I was growing up, I was 18 years old. I just graduated high school, and I got a big chunk of change from graduating. And I told my dad, hey, I want to buy a project car to work on because my dad worked on old cars. Mm-hmm. And so I got on eBay, and I bid. I found a Trans Am. I'm like, that's awesome. Like the Smoking Bandit, the T-tops, the big bird on the hood. And so I bid.
You wear a cowboy hat like that?
Exactly. I won, and I won the bid for $810. And my dad goes, where's it at? And I go, I don't know. And we look on the guy that I bought it from. It was on eBay.
Yeah.
And it was in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And we're in small town, like Smith Center, Kansas at the time. So we got in my dad's truck that weekend. It was during the school year. We got in my dad's truck. We put our car trailer on there, and we drove to Pennsylvania 24 hours straight, put the car on the trailer, drove 24 hours
And it broke
back.
Down 10 miles into your drive.
No. It ran though. I bought a 79 Trans Am that was running for $810. So
awesome.
It was a cool experience to do that with my dad. We just took turns driving and went up there and picked it up. So
Burt Reynolds was the biggest movie star ever back then.
There it is.
That Cannonball Run movie. I mean, look at that guy. I mean, how cool is that? Everybody wanted to be that
Iconic.
Guy.
Iconic.
Yeah. And the Cannonball Run movie, he got paid $4 million. Which at the time was the most ever, and he only worked for a couple weeks.
Right.
It was, I think Marlon Brando had gotten like $3 million for Apocalypse Now. But that was at the time the most ever for a movie. And
he was the biggest
he
star.
He really phoned it in. Yeah. Like, at that point, he was such a big star, he just put him in the movie, and he smiles and does a little goofy thing, and everybody goes and watches. Mm-hmm. And then his career faded. But then he kind of came back as he got older, and most people probably your age would recognize him from... You know, Boogie Nights or something like some other movie later in his career where
I'm a Smokey the Bandit guy.
Yeah, Smokey Man is great. I saw Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
I mean, that's
which is an amazing movie.
Like if you talk about the fight scenes and things that they went through in that movie and just the technology of, I mean, you know, they're being pulled on strings and doing all this kind of different stuff that nobody'd really done a big, huge movie production like that at that point. So
yeah.
I remember, I think I was in junior high or high school when it came out, and it was. We're like, what is this? Like, we all wanted to see it.
Did you see it in the theater?
I did.
Yeah, that was an amazing experience. I think it was the year 2000, and I didn't know much about it. I go, it looks interesting.
Right.
And, it was an experience like I've never
had. Go back
and
rewatch it now.
Yeah, it's great. I just watched it. It holds up. It's, you know, everybody started copying stuff like that after.
Right.
But that was the first one, and it was great, great movie.
I remember it being longer. Is it a longer?
It's 2 hours.
2 hours.
Yeah, it's right around 2 hours. Yeah. So a couple, the last two are two probably no one else has seen except for me. But Death Race 2050. So this is an alphabetical
list. Death
Race
2000.
So
right?
There's like seven Death Race movies. This Death Race
2050. Are you including the new ones?
Yeah.
Okay.
But the Death Race 2050 is actually a sequel to the original from the 1970s.
Okay.
So the original 1970s Death Race had Sylvester Stallone was one of his first ever movies. Roger Corman is this like B movie guy.
Right.
And so that's the poster for Death Race 2050, which is if you saw the original Death Race, it's very similar to that. It's just a fun like, you know, movie that way.
Right.
But it's not like the Jason Statham Death Race movie, which I like that one too.
That was a good one.
But they had sequels after that.
I didn't like the sequels after that. Those were bad.
I never saw those.
Yeah.
But this one goes back. If you, this is cheesy, low budget, hilarious. It's where people run over, they run over people for points. Like, that's what the original Death Race.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, so the, you know,
it's like when you're driving down the road and you see somebody and you're like, hey, 50 points.
You realize that's from the original Death Race movie from the 1970s. And so go back and watch the original Death Race, and if you like that, you'll like Death Race 2050.
Awesome.
And then the last one is called Everybody Wants Some, which I know you have actually seen because we watched it together previously. It's a Richard Linklater.
Linklater.
Everybody Wants Some. And it's about a college baseball team. And as college athletes, I think there's a lot of things that we connected. It's kind of the sequel to Dazed and Confused.
Right.
And so if you like Dazed and Confused, then you would like
Everybody Wants Some. And I think it's one of those things that a lot of people know about Dazed and Confused, but they have no idea about this movie.
No, this one didn't get released hardly at all.
And watching it, there's
hilarious.
It was extremely entertaining. It was extremely funny. It's like, how did a movie like this kind of slip through the cracks and not get the same recognition when it had the same director and was almost kind of a sequel?
I don't know how that stuff works, but I'm glad there's DVD and Netflix and things like that to find those movies.
Buy stuff for $2 on Amazon.
So at this point, I think we probably lost everybody who might have been watching originally, so probably a good time to wrap it up. So thanks for coming. Good luck in the season. I know, you know, last year was going to be hard to duplicate, but I know that's a goal. And appreciate you coming on the of all the guests we've had, you're the first.
I appreciate that.
So, and only.
Exactly.
So at least you made
I might be the only if this doesn't go anything
a up. Good chance you'll be the So anyways, thanks for watching. We're going to have a bunch of people from around the city of Wichita that I think are interesting and that'll be, I think, fun to listen to, at least for me and hopefully for you too. And thanks. This is the first ever Words with a Wise Guy podcast brought to you by WSU TV. Thanks for joining us.